I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Jessica Winiger. She is a sociocultural anthropologist, and she will be giving a talk called Creativity and Revolution, Egypt at a Crossroads, and that is at the New Mexico History Museum on Thursday, the 6th of October at 6:30 in the evening, sponsored by the School for Advanced Research. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
So you apparently often start your lectures asking people what comes to mind when they think of Egyptian art, and of course it's ancient Egyptian art and King Tut's tomb and so on. And I suspect that most people listening right now have no idea what contemporary Egyptian art is like. What's going on in Egypt? What is the art scene like? Are you looking at the big cities pretty much?
I'm looking at the big cities. It's an incredibly vibrant art scene. It has been in existence for over a century now, in fact. It's the largest art scene in the entire Arab world, the largest and the oldest. And it's become extremely vibrant in the past 10 or so years because there has been a lot of interest directed at the region, especially after 9/11 and the wars in the region. And so Egyptian artists have had a lot of opportunities to show their work abroad, and that has returned back home in terms of their resources and interest in creating all sorts of new art projects. I have to say, I used to start my talks asking people to imagine what comes to mind when they think of Egyptian art, and usually people think of King Tut, but now, in light of the revolution, I'm wondering if people will have a different, perhaps more contemporary image in mind of Egypt.
Well, what is the art like? What media are they working in, and how are they responding to current events?
Well, Egyptian artists work in all types of media, painting, sculpture, printmaking, new media, such as digital work, video art, performance art, installation. So it really runs the gamut. It can be figurative and representational. It can be abstract and conceptual. Photography is becoming quite popular in the region. Right now, many people in the art scene are just trying to figure out how they can do art in light of recent events. The biggest push has really been to bring art into the streets, to do a lot of art in public spaces. There's a big program called Fen El Midan, which is basically art in public squares in Tahrir and in other squares throughout the city of Cairo and throughout the country of Egypt. And the idea is to bring visual artists, musicians, theater professionals to the public and have the public interact with them. So it's really a kind of a revolutionary moment where there's this idea that we can get art out of the rarefied spaces of the galleries and museums and maybe use it for real social change and interact with people and find out what their vision is for the new Egypt.
To what extent are artists being censored or hassled or oppressed in any way by the government, if they are?
Do you mean right now or in the past?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right
now, well, this relates to another major trend in arts in the country right now, which is murals that are being done in public spaces. They're spontaneous murals done to commemorate the revolution, to commemorate the first victory, which was the ouster of Mubarak, as well as to call people's attention to remaining issues, which are really large, that need to be addressed. And there's a whole category of murals which are honoring the martyrs of the revolution. These are people who died in Tahrir Square and in other cities as a result of attacks by Mubarak's forces. They're called martyrs in Arabic. That's martyrs for the national cause or martyrs for the country. It's akin to our notion of a war hero. And there are many, many murals that have been done with pictures of these martyrs and sayings commemorating them. There has been some controversy in that it's believed that the Ministry of the Interior, which has been the object of much criticism, erased a couple of the murals. painted over them. And so this ignited a fair controversy in the artist community that how can there be, you know, censorship of what we agree upon was, you know, is a you know, national hero or an art for a national cause. The artists went out and repainted the murals. So that's the one major incident. And I think it's because whoever painted over it probably wanted to, you know, deny the idea that people were killed at the hands of government forces. And that's the subject of the trials right now, trials of Mubarak and other ministers and people in the military.
Well, let's talk about Mubarak and how it was under Mubarak for artists. I mean, was there a lot of censorship at that time?
There really wasn't. There wasn't of visual artists. There was much more censorship of writers, of literary artists, because their work was much more popular, was much more known, had greater visibility than visual artists. Visual arts is not the most popular of the arts in Egypt. That is, you know, arts that you would find in galleries and museums. And actually, under Mubarak, the Ministry of Culture really prided itself on having an open attitude towards the visual arts. But artists always spoke about internal self-censorship. They would say, you know, we don't do anything that talks about politics, religion, or sex. Those are the three forbidden topics, and because we're afraid that we will be censored. So it's a complicated issue. There was no real direct censorship, but there was a lot of self-censoring that went on.
If those subjects were excluded, what was left?
What was left was actually expressions of national pride was a huge theme in artwork, but there were also political critiques, but they weren't as obvious, perhaps, to someone who's not familiar with the visual arts or familiar with how artists express themselves. There were a lot of, for example, there were artworks that criticized environmental degradation, artworks that criticized gender hierarchy, that criticized poverty in society. So nothing that was against Mubarak per se, or that called out regime figures, but criticism of the general decline that artists were feeling in Egyptian society.
We're talking to sociocultural anthropologist Jessica Winiger. Now, when you look at Egyptian art, contemporary Egyptian art, how does it relate to, on the level of technique, medium, I mean, where they're coming from, to European art, to American art that's being created at the same time?
I would say that it is very similar to that art in that now in this more globalized arena with, access to the internet and artists' access to funding opportunities abroad and travel abroad, there's a lot of interaction. So artists are using many of the same techniques, the same media, and have some of the same sort of conceptual approaches as artists in Europe or the United States. I would say that the main difference, though, is that they're really rooted in Egypt, and so they may be concerned with global issues, but they're looking at how those get articulated in the space of Egypt. Some artists may use materials that are specific to Egypt or are viewed to be specific to Egypt, such as red granite, which was a material that, you know, ancient Egyptians used to make their sculptures. Or another artist might use trash in her art that she collected from the streets of Egypt. And so this is, you know, an expression of, say, the problems with garbage collection in Egypt, the problems with excessive commodification. So it can really run the gamut. But if you went into an art gallery showing contemporary Egyptian art, you wouldn't say that it was inferior or really different in technique or style than art in the European American capitals, but you would definitely see a difference in terms of the interest of the artists and their rootedness in problems that they are facing, just like an artist from New York would be expressing issues that he or she, you know, experiences in their particular location.
Sometimes there are many critics of art scenes, whether it be in the U.S. or Europe, who talk about the disconnection between the art gallery and museum scene and what ordinary people are doing on the street. And as you said earlier, there are artists trying to bring art really to a more popular audience and mm-hmm. of more ordinary people. How are they doing that, and how effective is it?
Well, they're primarily doing it by having these art festivals in the squares, but also there have emerged in the past 10 years in Egypt, 10 to 12 years, some art organizations that are not necessarily located in the downtown area where the art galleries are located or the elite areas, that are located more in popular neighborhoods, lower and working class neighborhoods. And they are really dedicated towards having open spaces where the community can come in and see the artwork and interact with artists and even do art themselves. There's also a gallery in downtown Cairo that does that as well. So they're creating new kinds of institutions that are not so exclusive, that have open doors and neighborhood-oriented projects. As for their success, I think only time will tell. I have not been in Egypt to witness some of these public festivals that have occurred, but the reports from my colleagues there indicate that they're extremely well attended, particularly if they have them on the same day that there's a political demonstration. So it's an opportunity to sort of meld the aesthetic and the political in that sense.
For you, as an anthropologist who's been studying this scene for many years, it must have been fascinating for you to witness this whole transition, the revolution and the consequences of it artistically. What have you seen?
It was really, really incredible. I have to say that my main focus during the first 18 days of the revolution when I was in Cairo was to really focus on the visual culture of the revolution, and that's a lot of what my talk will be about, actually, which is about the, the murals, the spontaneous graffiti, what people were writing in the square and around the city about the revolution, as well as the objects that people were creating to sell, things from, calendars with pictures of the martyrs on them to flags with particular designs on them, children's toys that had actually political messages, scarves with revolutionary slogans written on them. So there were a lot of very interesting objects being created and sold in Tahrir for the revolution, and that was very interesting to witness, how people expressed their revolutionary fervor. What was very interesting was when objects linking the revolution in Egypt with uprisings elsewhere, such as Libya, started to appear. So Libyan flags, for example, or pictures of all of the dictators in the Middle East together on handmade posters criticizing them. I also focused on the other kinds of arts like poetry and music that were coming out of the revolution. And there's a long tradition of poetry in Egypt, of political poetry in particular. And so that was really amazing to see this sort of outflowing of poetry that wasn't just an expression of the revolution, but was actually a motivator for people to maintain their spirit, to stay in Tahrir, to stay in the city, and to persevere. So art really became a motivator for action and helped people, keep their goals in mind. It wasn't just an expression. So that was very interesting to me, that art had a kind of human agency in that respect.
There's so much talk about the role of social media in the revolutions that have been going on. Is art traveling that way as well, through the internet and in the cybersphere, so to speak?
Oh, absolutely. Facebook has become a very important research tool for those people who are working on the revolution, as well as for all young people in Egypt as well. And so you have the creation of literally hundreds of Facebook sites, for example, dedicated to the arts, different kinds of the arts, the urban environment, different media forms, action calls, both in the field of the arts as well as obviously outside of it. So social media has become very, very important. And what's also very interesting to me is the amount of interest in some Western media in the arts of the region again. So there was this, after 9/11, there was a big burst of interest in the arts of the region. I think people wanted to know more about what was going on there and weren't satisfied with just the news of violence. I think we're seeing a bump again where you're starting to see a lot of news articles and radio interviews, for example, coming out that are showing interest in the arts of the region. And so that's really providing a great platform for artists to, you know, to talk about their struggles, their message, their hope for the region. So, and of course, all of that's on the internet and mass media. The things that's often said about this revolution is that it is a social media revolution. That seems a bit reductionist to me because it wouldn't have happened if there wasn't on-the-ground organizing. But certainly media played a role in galvanizing people and coordinating them, and I think making it happen a lot quicker than it would have happened if we had been in the pre-internet age.
To what extent are women part of this group of artists that you're talking about?
Oh, very much so. And in fact, women are a huge part of the revolution, not just as activists in the square and artists, you know, working in these alternative spaces and public squares, but also working at home. And that's something that we don't think about a lot with the revolution. You need people at home to, you know, to cook and you know, raise children and take care of the day-to-day so the revolution can happen. But for the most part in the artist community, you know, at least 50% of the artists are young women who are out there on the streets with everyone and arguing for their rights, both as women and as Egyptians.
Jessica Winogur is a sociocultural anthropologist. She will be giving a talk called Creativity and Revolution, Egypt at a Crossroads. That's at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium on Thursday, the 6th of October at 6:30, sponsored by the School for Advanced Research, which can be found on the web at sarweb.org. Jessica, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.